I did not picture the rest of my life not walking. What I did was I felt that I was going to walk again. I didn't know how. That was what I needed to find out, the how. Not the am I? Because if there's any possibility of something happening towards that I can, then I'm going to find the possibility. And the possibility is the path or the how. So right now, what I need to sort of say to myself, and not just say to myself, I felt it. I knew that I was going to walk again.
Welcome to the Business Mastermind Podcast with business strategist, speaker and author, Gavin Preston. Tap into this meeting of minds between everyday business people on their journey to master business growth. Join them as they share strategies, insights and shortcuts to help you survive and thrive in business and life as you scale your business and achieve a bigger impact.
Hey, Gavin here. You love the audio format because you listen to podcasts. I'm a massive fan of learning through audio courses and books. What I particularly like about Knowable is that courses are short form, like a podcast, and expert-led, like an audiobook, with courses on leadership from the commander of the International Space Station and on startups from the co-founder of Reddit. Grab yourself 20% off with coupon code GAVIN in capital letters, G-A-V-I-N, which brings the price down to just over $3 a month. It's a no-brainer. Download the Knowable app or visit knowable.fyi. Use code GAVIN to get 20% off. Hey, Gavin here. Welcome back to the Business Mastermind Podcast. Today's episode is a little bit different. This is a story of inspiration. It's a story of an injury, an accident that became a stroke and paralysis of a young lady that was determined to have a professional football career, and a story of recovery, of collaboration, of community that has actually been the genesis of the building and development of a brand new tutoring platform to bring students in contact with tutors for various different skills that they need to enhance their opportunities in the world of work and the world of business. So I wanted to bring Alejandra Carina Garzo onto the podcast because it's a powerful and inspirational stories. As I'll say in the introduction, you know, human beings were moved by stories, and stories evoke emotions. And hopefully this one will bring out in you a level of determination and renewed gratitude for the people around you that help you to achieve what you do on a daily, weekly and monthly basis. Hello, welcome to the Business Mastermind Podcast. It's the stories in life that move us as human beings, and it's the emotion that we invoke in ourselves and others that actually creates transformation, it creates innovation, and it creates progress. And today I'm really delighted to have Alejandra Carina Garzo join me on the Business Mastermind Podcast. This is a story of determination, one of a totally unexpected illness that left her paralyzed, a story of determination, and a story of love and collaboration, which an importance of community, that out of which has developed a real desire to found a new marketplace, a new app that will connect teachers and students together across the world and to provide extra tuition when needed, on most in a way that's easily accessible over a smartphone or tablet. So, Alejandra, welcome to the Business Mastermind Podcast.
Hello, Gavin. Thank you so much for having me, and thank you for that introduction. That was such a nice introduction, and I'm very honored to be here in your podcast.
So, I'd like you to introduce yourself. But I want you to introduce yourself by telling your story, and then we'll kind of fill in some of the gaps as well. So, the mic is yours. Tell your story.
Sometimes I don't really know where to begin. The best way to start is from where I was originally, where my life was steering me towards, or the ambitions I had before. So from when I was a very, very young person, when I was a little girl, I've always wanted to be a footballer. I'm originally from Colombia, so I started playing the streets of Colombia with my older brother. I have a lovely older brother who who was one of those people who would be the first one to pick me in the teams and would be the first one to, at the time, well, there weren't any female football teams or academies, so he would always take me with him and say, like, no, it's okay to have my little sister in my team, which is brilliant, which is, I'm very grateful for that, for having that support. So growing up, I always wanted to play football, and that's something that wherever I went, I tried to find a team. And the last team that I was playing for is was Bournemouth University, and I was playing for the varsity team. And before then, I played in other teams, and all of this was part of a process that was my life ambition to become this footballer and this determined and in whatever team I wanted to be in. I always wanted to find a way to kind of move to the next step, move to the next level. And with that in mind, I also pushed myself quite a bit on the conditioning side. And sometimes, I guess, from, you know, that determination that you have mixed with maybe lack of knowledge in your youth, you forget to rest. And that's something that happened to me. I wasn't resting enough for the amount of exercise that I was doing, for the amount of movement my body was having. And and football in itself is quite demanding physically. After a few years of keeping on going, I started getting some back injuries, and I kept on going. I remember I once played a game after I just had a sciatic crisis or something like that.
Oh, wow.
I couldn't, and I couldn't stop in between my sprints. I had to keep on like jogging, because if I had stopped, I wouldn't have been able to carry on. And I now, hearing myself, I know that that's not something that I should have done. But sometimes when you have this determination to do something that is so, it's such a passion of yours since you were quite young, it's easy to kind of continue doing things like that. But I think life just had to teach me a lesson. And I learned a lot through that, whether it was teamwork, whether it was discipline, because you have to sort of wake up. I remember in America when I was playing in a university there, our conditioning trainer was an ex-Navy SEAL. And we had to get to our conditioning at 5. It started at 5. So we had to get there before 5. And if anyone in our team was not present, we all had to kind of, you know, like pay for it. But it was just because it was a way of teaching us that we're all responsible for each other as a team. It's not about the individual. I was here. No, it's about, okay, how do we make sure that the whole team is here? So those aspects of football are very, I think they've stayed with me, and that's very important. And they're key things for the game and for many aspects of life, really. But then with all of this, years of pushing my body, I ended up, before my final year of university, I ended up having kind of the last straw of my back, and I was in the hospital for about a month. I was in a wheelchair, because one day it wasn't even during training, I literally just could not stand up. And I was in a hospital for about a month. And then I wanted to, again, come back and do university, do my final year. And even though I was in a wheelchair, even though I was on like 20 odd pills of medication, which I do not recommend to anyone.
So what happened? You damaged your back, had you, through excessive training?
Yes, I damaged my back. I used to lift weights since I was very young. I started weightlifting since I was about 12. And sometimes I remember when I was 17, I was lifting my trainer, who was very heavy.
Wow.
Going up the stairs, running. Like these things. I was pushing my body quite a bit. And sometimes
as your body was still growing and developing.
Yes. Yeah. So as I mentioned, I mean, sometimes it's determination, sometimes it's lack of knowledge in the different things that you do. I don't regret anything that I did, because it led me to the point where I am. And I think there were lessons to be learned there. Definitely. And
so you went back to training after you had the month in hospital?
No, after I had the month in the hospital, I was still in the wheelchair, right? After the month, I couldn't walk properly. And the doctors, I actually went to the spinal hospital, and the surgeons, they told me, your back is too bad, you're too young, we can't really do anything about it. There isn't really a solution for it, and anything that we suggest could actually cause more damage than actually heal it. So at that point, they kind of just sent me home with a lot of medication. I was in medication that was definitely not good. It was things that were very, very strong for me, like opiates and these sort of things that I definitely, well, from my point of view, and that's just like my personal perspective, because I'm not a professional, but I wouldn't recommend people going on such hard medication and so much amount.
Oh, I know. I had in 2015, I had a big eye injury actually, and I was put on tramadol for the first time in my life. And I remember the very first time I took it, and I'd never had any medication of that strength before. And I went to have a lie down, and I ended up having breakfast with Princess Diana. I was hallucinating that, and I had lunch with Sir Richard Branson. And but I remember, yes, it obviously dealt with what I was experiencing, was really bad pain because I nearly lost my right eye. The doctors, the surgeons were really, really careful about the limits of how much dosage they gave me, and weaned me off it as quick as they could before I got addicted, because I know a lot of people do. So it's incredibly, incredibly powerful stuff. And yeah, I wasn't myself when I was taking it, and not to the level of you do, but I carried on working at the time. And so there was some interesting behavioral things that came out of me working with massive sleep deprivation, because I had to wake up every hour, at some stage every half hour, to put eye drops on to get rid of the infection out of my eye and save my eye, and carry on working and on tramadol. So yeah, that was interesting. So I can relate to what you mean about strong opiates by way of medication.
Your eye is not right now.
Yeah, I had to have what's called a corneal graft, so a replacement cornea on my eye. It was a silly thing actually that happened. I was taking out a contact lens, and I scratched my eyeball in doing it, and I went through the tube in London the next day, and I then got an infection in my eye, and it very quickly went very, very bad, and so they had we saved the eye, thankfully. It got to what point one of a millimeter of thickness. So I was very, very lucky. I couldn't bend down to pick up my little boy. I only had one boy at the time. I couldn't bend down to pick up my little boy. I couldn't pick up a briefcase. I know we're going to talk about how family helped and supported, but you know, my dad just drove me around the country to literally carry my suitcase and my briefcase and help me while I carried on working and delivering, you know, coaching and training. So yes, that was my one experience of tramadol, and hopefully the experience of tramadol. But I understand what you mean about that level of determination. So you came out of hospital, you had a very strong cocktail of opiate-based medication, and presumably you then started physio?
So I started doing hydrotherapy, and I actually started my final year of university as well.
Wow.
So I was, my mom actually, she was in Colombia at the time, and she flew over to take care of me. And I'll just give you a brief example. I don't know if it's just brief, but of how my day looked when I started university. I would tricep dip myself up to the shower, because I stayed in the ground floor. It was next to the kitchen. It was next to a small toilet. But it.
So you've got no movement of your legs. You can't walk.
No, at that point, with a back injury, I couldn't step on it. I couldn't walk it properly. Actually, not even properly. Every time I stepped on it, I felt the nerve on the sole of my foot.
Wow.
And as well, my back was not having any pressure on it as well. It was very inflamed. It was definitely not doing well at all. And I was in a wheelchair at the time. So I would try to dip my way upstairs to the shower, and then come back down. My mom will push me to the university, which was about 10 minutes away. So we would go, and it wasn't fun when it was raining.
No.
So my mom would push me to the university. I would do university with this cocktail of opiates. The way I saw my teachers, if I could explain it in a way, is if you go to, I don't know if they still have it, but to these small little like convenience stores type thing, they have these mirrors at the top that they look like you're looking through a magnifying glass, but the other way around, and everything's out. That's how I saw my teachers in class. That's the only way I can explain it. And whenever they talked everything, I was just so out of it. With that as well, as soon as I finished, there was an ambulance waiting for me outside of the university to take me to my hydrotherapy, which was like 2-3 hours away. And then I would do my hydrotherapy or whatever therapy I had. And then I would come back around 10, 11 sometimes to my house and start my university work. I couldn't sleep because of the pain. I couldn't, even though I was in all that cocktail of medicine, I still had pain. I still didn't have very much movement. And I was very tired from everything from that day. That was one day. You'd multiply that by every day, especially in a final year of university. It's quite heavy. 3 weeks after my university started, on the last day, on the third day, on the third week, that Friday, I realized something. I just kind of in my head, I was with my friend. My friend came over to cook some Colombian dinner with my mom. We were having fun, all of that. And at that moment, I realized I'm tired. All of this is happening, but I guess this is how my life is going to have to be for the next year, at least when I finish university, or once I finish university. At that moment, somehow I managed to relax. And at that moment was when everything started going wrong. I told my mom, my tummy is burning. I don't know what's happening. My tummy's burning. We first thought it was a medication that I didn't put food in me. But then I realized that the medication that I had didn't actually cause that. And that I have had other medication before that was much stronger without something in my tummy. And it was all right. And then I started not being able to breathe. So I started feeling asphyxiated. I had gone, so my mom would take me with a swivel chair to the kitchen because it was right next door. So she actually started rolling me back to my bedroom and putting me next to the bed. And my friend and my mom were freaking out. Well, freaking out in the calmest way, really. It was very blurry to me at points, but I've talked about this with my mom quite a few times. And so afterwards, I started not being able to breathe. So so my mom will put me on my bed and lifted my legs up because she said, well, that might help you to breathe. That made me feel even worse. I just felt like I could not breathe at all. So she sat me down again and I started convulsing. So my whole body started shaking. And my mom was saying that I was slurring my words. I thought I was leaning against her, but she said I was banging my head against hers because she was on this side, on my right side. And then I started telling my mom that I couldn't feel my extremities. So she started massaging my right side, but my left side completely dropped. And I was still convulsing and all of this was happening. I was...
Were you having a stroke at this stage?
Yeah. So this is, and it was literally at the moment when I realized, I was like, okay, I'm going to just ride through this year, because that was a moment of relaxation. And actually the doctors explained that to me. My body saw an opportunity to reboot. Like my brain saw an opportunity to reboot because it saw an opportunity of, you're calm. This is the moment to do that. So with everything that was happening at that moment, so the ambulances were called, what the first one came, and the medical professional, the ambulance person, I don't know what they're called, sorry. The paramedic, that's it. The paramedic. So there were two stages of paramedics that came. The first one was just with a small car. And some of these things that I'm telling you are actually filled in as well from what I
saw.
So the first one just came and gave me gas. I remember he was asking me questions that at the time I thought, why are you asking me this? It's like, so what do you do in university? How are you doing? Oh, like things like, how's it going? And I'm like, I'm not doing very well. Why are you asking me? But then I was told afterwards that this is probably to actually make sure that I stayed awake, that I didn't kind of pass out or anything. And he gave me gas to help me relax. And it allowed me to relax my body, and the convulsing kind of lessened, and all these other symptoms, or not symptoms, all these other things that were happening to my body kind of like calmed down a little bit. And then a bigger ambulance came and they took me to the hospital. And when I eventually woke up in the hospital the next morning, I don't know, quite early, I think it was like 4 or 5, because all of this happened from started around like 7 p.m. the day before. And then when I woke up after all of this happened at like 4 or 5, the whole left side of my body was paralyzed. So I couldn't feel it. I couldn't move it. I didn't know what was happening. I was also under a lot of drugs and all these different things. And I was in the hospital after all of that happened. I was in the hospital for about a month. So perhaps 24, 25 days or almost a month. And so I got a lot of tests. Very fortunately and grateful for that, they did CT scans and there was no permanent damage in my brain. But a couple of specialists came and they diagnosed me with functional neurological disorder, which basically is that your nervous system, your functional system is not responding to the signals you're sending from your brain to move, right? So there is a disconnect between the function and the nervous system. And so I would tell my body or my left side to move and it wouldn't move. However,
so you would literally think about, say, lifting your left arm and nothing would happen.
Yes, exactly. And so part of the therapies at first in the hospital was actually, I mean, now that I think about it, it was actually quite brutal, but I understand exactly why. Brutal, and it might be a strong word, but it was more like things to make me react more so than think about the actions that I was doing. So for example, one of the things they would do was I would have a plastic cup, one of those really thin ones and very light ones. Mm-hmm. They would put my hand and put the plastic cup on my lap and sometimes lift a little bit higher. And then start filling the cup, right? First of all, it was me trying to grab the cup, but it's quite light. So
with your left hand?
With my left hand, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
It wouldn't work. Like my hand was just... So what happens after you, to the people that get or that have anything to do with functional neurological disorder is that it can have different consequences depending on the person. I was able to... I guess if I think about it, it was lucky that I was able to kind of relax in that stage where I had the sort of mimic of stroke or type of stroke that I had, because by being able to relax, my body just kind of flopped, whereas other people tend and then their whole body kind of just goes into a spasm.
Okay. Right?
That's even more difficult to recover because they first need to make it go back to relaxed and then strengthening it again. So that would be an extra stage that they would have to recover. So for me, my body was already like flopped, like literally. And the whole left side, I remember it was very difficult to start lifting my arm because all of this got a lot of tension because it had to carry the whole weight of the arm and the whole body because it was pulling that weight. So I remember I was pulling from this side the whole time to be able to kind of move.
Okay.
I'm showing you, I don't know. That's planetary, but that's sort of how it looked. And when they diagnosed me with that, they told me, well, we don't know if you're going to be able to recover. We don't, because it is, even though quite a few people have the chance of getting something like this, because it's due to stress, and that stress at the time was caused by my at the time issue with the back, as well as the medication, as well as the amount of stuff that I was doing and the lack of rest and all of that. So that was the cause of it. It was stress. It was all a point of
So stress. You're obviously, it's a very scary time for you. So how old are you at this stage? 20, 21?
I'm 23 at this stage.
23. You've been told you may never walk again. What's going through you? Obviously you're under a lot of medication, and what's going through your mind about your future, your life ahead of you?
At the time, there were two thoughts. I mean, one of them was, this is not true, right? I am going to walk again. I always had it in my heart that I was going to walk again. But at the same time, in order to get to that stage, I also had to acknowledge that I wasn't able to walk. right?
I want to unpick that because there's that's so powerful. So you, it was a heartfelt, a gut feel, an intuition that said this is not true.
Yeah, if there was any possibility, they said there is a possibility you might not walk again. That means there is a possibility I will walk again.
But we already know you were incredibly determined, incredibly kind of like headstrong. But was this the head speaking, or was this like an inner intuition or inner knowing that this is not true? It was more than just a determined Alejandra.
Yeah, I understand. Yeah, it's just, I think for me, it was, it may seem like logic the way I've said it, but it's actually something that I felt, I knew in my heart that I did not picture the rest of my life not walking. What I did was I felt that I was going to walk again. I didn't know how. That was what I needed to find out, the how, not the am I? Because if there's any possibility of something happening towards that I can, then I'm going to find the possibility. And the possibility is the path or the how. So right now, what I need to sort of say to myself, and not just say to myself, I felt it. I knew that I was going to walk again.
Hey, Gavin here. You love the audio format because you listen to podcasts. I'm a massive fan of learning through audio courses and books. What I particularly like about Knowable is that courses are short form, like a podcast, and expert-led, like an audiobook, with courses on leadership from the commander of the International Space Station and on startups from the co-founder of Reddit. Grab yourself 20% off with coupon code GAVIN in capital letters, G-A-V-I-N, which brings the price down to just over $3 a month. It's a no-brainer. Download the Knowable app or visit knowable.fyi. Use code GAVIN to get 20% off. You knew that, but also like in the next stage was, you had, I guess, the presence of mind to recognize that you had to rest first, because your previous strategy for things like this was head down, push harder, be more and more determined. But you had a realization that you actually needed to heal to rest first.
Yeah. And even throughout that recovery, I still wanted to push myself in many ways. And I had to, part of the support that I mentioned with my family, because my family and my close friends, I even made a friend that I'm incredibly grateful to have met, and I don't mind saying her name's Julia, and I actually met her when I was already like this, and we became close by how much she helped me. She's been incredible in that, because you don't find people that do that, really, that they don't know you and then they help you so much. And I mean, I think there are many people that way, but I'm just very grateful to have had the opportunity to have been on the other side of being having someone who was able to do that. And but that was, as you mentioned, like I had this kind of way of doing things, of pushing myself. And that was something that was also important, that I had that support system, because they told me, we know you want to walk, but you need to also rest in between. And I had to learn that as well, the tough way, where all the time they face planted, and I was like, okay, I probably need to stop. I did literally face plant, because as you try to walk again, it's in between, it's a frustration, and it's very psychological. It's not just physical, this recovery, because I remember the times when I was with the walking aids, and there were moments when I wanted to take the next step, but my whole body started spazzing. So my head would shift backwards, and then my face would pull, because it has that, when you have these sort of things that are stroke related, you have these spasms that you get. So when you try to push yourself a bit too hard, your body starts expanding more. So my face would flip, like, I don't know how to explain, which is like to the side. And I would push and try to push the next step, and my leg just wouldn't have it. And I remember there was another exercise that I used to do, that it was pedaling, but it was just not in a bike or anything, just with pedals that you have to be sitting down. And whenever I tried to push from with one of the legs, my entire top body would go forward. But I didn't intend that. So my mom had to push me against the wall so that I could kind of try to do the exercise the best way without actually going forward. So it's all these things that mentally you have to kind of stay strong in, that I'm going to continue. And all of that also, there's pain in between all of that. So it's about going the next step, the next time. And at the same time, kind of realizing, okay, I've done a little bit more and that still counts, because sometimes it's difficult to see that big progress when you're having those therapies. And also it's very debilitating when you think you're going to do that next step and you can't. And as I mentioned, my family and my close friends were amazing support there, from telling me stop and saying, you need to listen to your body, to also helping me when I was tired and saying, you can do this, you can push yourself a bit more, whatever it is.
This is physio sessions every day to learn to walk again.
To do everything, really.
To do everything, to get mobility in your left-hand side of your body. And
yeah, so it was from literally having peas or beans or something like that, and just kind of learning to grab that and then kind of shifting from one side to the other.
Yeah.
Those little things, to being able to walk again, to being able to just even lift your arm, you know, things.
Did you develop new qualities in your personality, in your character, such as patience?
Yeah, I think, well, I hope I did learn quite a few things. I do think that I've changed. I do think that it has made me more so personality. I think it's maybe ways of seeing life. The first time I was able to, because I have been able to ride a bike again, first time that I did that, I almost crashed because I looked to the side and I actually took this bike ride next to the beach. So I'm down in Bournemouth, and that was one thing that I wanted to do. I just wanted to be able to walk and breathe that air and be able to kind of enjoy that without being sat in a wheelchair, without all these different things. And the first time that I rode that bike, I almost crashed because I closed my eyes to kind of inhale this sort of moment. And I was like, oh, I need to, I'm riding a bike. And I had to open my eyes and all of that. But those moments that you kind of start appreciating, even just being able to walk again, even able to kind of open the door. I remember opening the doors. I created this whole trick to open the doors, which was to kind of open, because there's a lot of heavy doors around where I live. So to open the door, then I kind of do like this shimmy thing and then pull myself through the door and then kind of like pull and flip the wheelchair. And then so that the momentum would push me forward, because I had a manual wheelchair, so I couldn't really open the door and do all these different things. And I remember that I used to also push myself, and with the wheelchair, you have these gloves that are always very good. So I used to push myself against the wall. And if you go right now, there are marks of my hands there. So it's all these different things that you develop on how to do things differently. For example, I learned how to tie my shoelaces with one hand. I learned how to play cards with one hand. So I used to put my cards here on I don't know how to call this part, the inside
inside of your elbow. Yeah, yeah.
Inside of my elbow, I would put my card there and then kind of do like this and then flip then to play cards with my mom or my friends. So you do develop these different skills of kind of, okay, I can't do this with my two hands as I'm used to. Let's find creative ways to do this the best way I can. And that's one side. So finding ways of doing things, of moving around, of dealing with, I can't see because I don't know how this is going to sound, but I used to have to dodge a lot of, I wouldn't be able to see, all I would see bumps everywhere, because that's the level that my eyes would go. So whenever I needed to kind of say to someone, sorry, I can't see, or I can't. So I had to be very like, kind of touch the side of the leg and kind of be like, excuse me, you know. And you have to kind of do those things and be fine doing those things, because, or else you're just going to be stuck there, like not being passed or whatever it is. So it's just also finding ways to be fine with that as well. So if you needed to ask for help, that's another thing. I guess that change of my personality, I always thought, you know, I'm going to be able to do this on my own. That's not true. Like, I was never going to be able to overcome that on my own. I was never going to be able to, I'm not saying that people are not able to, I just think personally having people there and giving them that value of that help, for example, with my family, I got closer because I allowed them to help me, but because I mean, they helped me so much. I'm so grateful for that. But I think allowing people to help you is also a good thing, because it also gives them the value and it recognizes that value that they have of helping others. So And that's how you can also create connections and how you can create a story behind your connections.
So let's just fast forward from there then. So how many months did it take to be able to leave the wheelchair and be able to walk?
Yeah, so I actually, the first time I walked without a walking aid was less than a year ago, actually. It was in May, end of May was the first time I walked out without a wheelchair. So what I did was, in order to get out of the wheelchair, I gave myself goals, things that I really wanted to do. So in February last year, my brother got married. And I said to myself the first time, well, he proposed about a year before then. And I said to him, I am going to dance with you at your wedding.
Oh, amazing.
And that was a promise I did to him. But to get to that point, I had to kind of hit different milestones, if you like. And that's the way I did it. And when I talked to my therapist, that's the way I kind of saw it. I said, okay, if I'm going to dance with my brother, granted, I didn't full self-dance or anything like that.
No.
Just swaying, really. But if I was going to dance with my brother at that point, I needed to be able to stand at this point. And I did really get quite a few of my therapies towards the end of that period to be able to have the strength to do that, to sway, to balance myself, to all of those different things. But before then, it was just being able to just stand. So just standing at certain points, it was just my legs were shaking the entire time. So, and that was kind of like, I was very determined that I wanted to do that. And I, when I make promises, I like to keep them. So I made that promise and I was able to fulfill it.
Amazing. And that must have been such an emotional time for the whole family. An amazing moment of achievement for you, but quite an emotional time for the whole family. So your determination has got a channel, but you've also got a real appreciation of community, of collaboration. So that mind of yours was wanting to be able to find a way of giving back. And so you started to formulate an idea around a new sort of community, a new platform that could really help students. So was this born out of a need that you had to want to continue learning, but needed to learn via your phone and you couldn't necessarily go to lectures?
Right. So this was actually born out of how I funded my recovery. So when all of this happened, it was very all of a sudden, really, because when it started, I was in my mind that summer of 2018, I was training to go back to university and play the last year of football. And then everything changed then. And with all of that, there were a lot of, and as I mentioned, the doctor said there was nothing they can do. So I wasn't able to kind of get support from that part, and I didn't have an insurance that could cover all the different things that were new. So what I had to do is I had to look for different paths. So I looked at alternative therapies. I looked at traction for my back. That helped a little bit. I looked at also changing all my diets in all very, very natural. Everything that I did was very much to see what could work for my recovery. And many of these things weren't always in Bournemouth. So to get to the different places, I had to have transportation. And now, as I mentioned, I was still in the wheelchair. So it was very difficult for me to use. And it was wheelchair past the pain of these different therapies. I wasn't able to stay in a train for 2 hours sat because it was in my bag, just could not have it. So I had to get transportation. But there was other costs. So there were a lot of costs involved in my recovery and I couldn't finance it. Or at least not how you usually finance with your own money and all of that. So what I started doing was I started seeing what I did have, and what I had were the skills that I had developed throughout my years, whether it was languages, whether it was my design skills, the different things that I could offer, and see whether there was a potential necessity or exchange of these skills in return for the therapies or the transportations. And I did the proposal, not I mean, to my surprise, they said yes. But at the same time, I had some hope. That's why I proposed that I had some hope in that they would agree. And I was very determined that I was going to find a way to finance this recovery. And but the medical professionals and the transportation people, they said, yeah, we'll do it for the exchange of what you're offering. And that's how I started doing more of like a system of barter. And that's how I financed my recovery, really. A couple of years after, a year and a half after that, I went back to university. I was still in the wheelchair, but I was still wanting to get my skills improved, to complement my skills, to help find a way to present my 3D design, because in university I do industrial design, so to be able to present the same way, the best way, so my 3D products or my 3D design skills weren't going to be enough for a presentation, so I had to find 2D design skills. And I talked to my friend and I asked him, if I teach you 3D, can you teach me 2D? Like, to kind of do that same kind of exchange, but at this time it wasn't a barter exchange, it was an exchange of skills or exchange of knowledge. And he turned around and he said, no. And I was like, oh, that's great. But no, he then said, I don't want to learn 3D, but I know you know Spanish. Can you teach you Spanish? And that's when I was like, well, yeah, I can teach you Spanish. And I realized that sometimes it's not just how you see things or what can be of value for someone else, but sometimes that person is looking for something that you don't know yourself, you're not presenting yourself. So this is where all of this really started kind of making me see an opportunity. And I wanted to research if there was a platform that does this sort of thing, of that kind of exchange of skills in university students, or exchange of skills in complementary skills. Nowadays, we see that there's a lot of competition with the people that come out of university, because you have the diplomas, and many people have the diplomas, and it's great education. It's very, very valuable. However, now employers are also looking for transferable and hard and soft skills, such as languages, such as skills that complement your own skill, or even skills that can say, okay, I've got leadership, or even independence and discipline. And this can be shown by, I don't know, you learn an instrument that shows discipline, because you need to practice, right? So all these different things that I wanted to see if there was a community that does all these different things. And I couldn't find a platform like this. So if I can't find it, then there is an opportunity. And there was a necessity. I asked around quite a bit through my university peers if there was a necessity for it, and there is. And I also researched, and that's what I'm trying to create at the moment. That's what I'm creating.
So where are you up to now then? So you started, you've got obviously industrial design background from your degree studies. And I've seen the look and the feel of the kind of beta of the platform, the development stage of the platform. It looks fantastic. The design is awesome. So just explain what it is that you're building.
Yeah, so I'm building a tutoring platform that really looks at the value of community and looks at all kinds of skills. It looks at the value that you have as an individual. And even though it does reward you with a financial resource, it does also reward you in that you can come in and learn without necessarily having to have that financial resource. So it enables you to create the financial resource yourself, and giving value to that knowledge that you have of whatever skill you have. And something else.
And you do that with the currency on the app, so that if somebody wants to learn Spanish in this case and doesn't have the funds to paying pounds or dollars for it, they can earn some coins by teaching, I don't know, 2D design. Yeah, to give you your example.
Yeah, so that's the concept. It's the concept is allowing those people that don't have the financial resources to come in and give from their knowledge, and then be able to come back and say, okay, now I have the financial resources to support my learning. And it's really, it's giving accessibility. to all kinds of backgrounds. So it's given accessibility to all kinds of knowledge as well, in all different levels of skill, all different skill levels, whether it's basic to intermediate to advanced, whatever skill level you have, it's giving that value really. And another thing that's also important is that as core of everything that's happening, I think it's important as well to realize that there is an opportunity now with having connection with a global access. But at the same time, this connection of the virtual world can sometimes create disconnect with the real world, in a sense, in quote unquote real world. And what I want to also kind of put here into this platform is create different partnerships with organizations that help environmentally, that help with education, that help in different aspects, so that there is a real sense of social and environmental consciousness in whoever is coming in to use the platform. That is something that is also showing that with little action or indirect action, you can, as a community, collaboratively create a big impact. And that is something that you will be able to see through this platform. And that is very important, and it's part of the core.
Brilliant. So the vision then is to create a tutoring platform where students can find tutors, whether they be, you know, formal people who have the profession of teaching that subject, or informal, that individuals say, I know, you know, I might know about body language, for example, and interpreting human behavior, or sailing in my case, or something like that, that I could share that knowledge or skill with somebody that would want to learn to sail, with somebody who wants to learn, in return I might want to learn Spanish from them. So that's fantastic, that. But and you create a currency on the site for that, and then you're then helping the plantation of trees for all the people who are on the, you know, the platform, all the transactions that take place as a contribution towards plantation of trees around the world.
Yeah, that's right. So that's something that, as I mentioned, the user of the platform doesn't have to do anything extra. It's just something that we, by your interaction with the platform, it triggers us to be able to enable that donation and to be able to help in so many ways, really.
So where are you in this sort of development phase of the platform?
Yeah, so we're quite close to finishing the development. However, We need more help, really. We need, I've been trying to kind of finance it as much as possible, but at the same time, we've gotten to the point that we need support. We need support to create this community. It is a community because the app is nothing without the people within it. And it really is created by all the values that come in around those people that come in and want to better themselves, but also help others better themselves. And it just becomes a chain.
So what specifically you're looking for then? You're looking for some investors and also maybe some people to help you on the team?
Yes, so I'm looking for investors. I'm looking if there's people that find or are fond of this idea and want to come in and be part of the team. I'm definitely open to all kinds of hands because, as I mentioned, I know that it is impossible to do everything on your own. It really is. And I think people... it's important to give that value to those to that knowledge that they would have in their field. So I am looking for people to come in, as well as I've got a GoFundMe on at the moment, and this is something that was created to kind of touch on the human side of how all of this was created, on not just about the platform, but something that really helped me in my recovery was seeing other people's inspirational stories and seeing the possibility and hope behind and above that each particular story, because it is all individual, but at the same time there is a whole team behind all of that have helped each individual, and that really inspired me to see, okay, there is a chance of me being able to recover. And that is something that I also want to kind of express and show in sort of in the homeless way, I guess, because I don't really know, I didn't know at the time what was going to happen at the end, but I was blessed to be able to recover. But throughout that whole process, I still have to do therapies every morning. I still have to strengthen myself and I still have to eat very healthy. I don't take any medication. I actually had a really bad reaction to it and I went cold turkey for a whole month. I couldn't eat, I couldn't sleep, I couldn't, I was sweating. It was great. So I don't take any medication, but I also need to take care of my body a lot. And there are people who, whatever they have going on is a lifelong thing. So I just want to also kind of present, I guess, just a life story that, or well, my personal story, where there is a possibility that even throughout recovery, or even if you have a long-term thing, you can still create something that can be of value to others and that can help others whilst you still help yourself in your recovery.
Fantastic. And if anybody wants to find out more of Alejandra's story, wants to sort of help support the recovery and the development, how do they do that? So we've got a bit.ly link for you. So it's Recovery Ale, A-L-E for Ali. So Recovery Ale. So bit.ly/recoveryale, A-L-E at the end. And if you want to find out more about the platform or find out more about you on LinkedIn, how do they do that?
Yeah, so they can go to GoFundMe and write Recovery Ale. And they can also go to the LinkedIn, to the link you've just mentioned. If they want to contact me, they can contact me to my LinkedIn. So Alejandra Carreño Garzón. I don't know if you're, so Alejandra.
The details will be in the show notes.
Yeah, as I mentioned, I'm originally from Colombia, so my name is a Spanish name. But yeah, and feel free to contact me on LinkedIn. That's, I'm very open to any conversation. I'm also quite easy to talk about whatever it is, even if it's about the project that I'm working on or anything else that I can help with. I'm happy to talk.
And are you prepared to let a sneaky peek at what the platform? So if you want to have a look at the design and kind of where the original website that's up there is a holding place?
Yeah, so it's www.mixter.com. So Mixter is spelled M-E-I-X-T-E-R. And
M-E-I-X-T-E-R, Mixter.com.
Yeah, that's right. And yeah, so this is sort of, well, the name, if you're wondering why it's called Mixter, it comes from the German Meister, which means master of or knowledgeable in something. And the X comes for the exchange of skills. So the S was replaced for an X for that exchange. So that's really what the basis of it is. And I'd be very, very grateful for any support that can be given for this project, because I think we can really create together, we can create something that can be very beautiful and that can help so many people in so many parts of the world, and also in the environment and other things along the way, as well as education. It can really be something that can be of value. So, yeah.
Thank you. Thank you, Alejandra, for joining us on the Business Mastermind podcast and for sharing such a powerful and inspirational story that out of your own experience of, you know, injury and then illness and stroke, to learning to move and walk again, to getting the lessons of collaboration, determination, community, and look at that resourcefulness and that need to help fund your recovery, come upon a creation of an idea or a platform that I know will change lives, will improve education across the world at a time when people just want to be able to pick up a smartphone and learn so they can be having greater value. So the ripple effect of what you're now doing, I'm sure, is going to be significant, both in people's future careers and contribution and also to the planet with the trees that you're planting. So thank you, Alejandra, for your time on the Business Mastermind podcast.
Thank you so much, Gavin, for having me.
You've been listening to the Business Mastermind podcast. Be sure to subscribe, rate, and review so that more people like you can get their business back on their own terms, enjoy more success, and create more impact.